ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Sucks we can't get over the damn hump and, you know, put a W on the board when we need it. But our guys' spirit is really pure, and they're fighting a good fight. We just keep falling short. It sucks telling these guys every game, proud of you, good effort. We lost.
That's the voice of Lakers coach Frank Vogel, who currently finds himself feeling like both Sisyphus and Stuart Smalley, offering his players these daily affirmations about how they're good enough and smart enough and also still totally unable to get that playoff boulder over that damn hill. So today, with the NCAA tournament officially behind us and only a handful of games left in the NBA's regular season, we ask Brian Windhorst to be our playoff myth buster, separating frauds from contenders in the East and West. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, April 5th. This is ESPN Daily.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Ryan Windhorst, I'm going to start here by saying what I don't think you can say as an objective journalist who covers all things and all people fairly in this sport. I want the Lakers to make the playoffs. Ryan, 10 of the 15 teams in either conference makes the quote-unquote playoffs, including the play-in. And the Lakers are currently the 11th team in the West. They've lost six in a row. They're behind San Antonio, two games behind them for the final play-in spot, that 10 seed. How would you describe how things are looking for the Los Angeles Lakers right now?
Pablo, in all honesty, it's even worse than that because there are not all 30 teams who are trying to make the playoffs. There are a handful of teams that are actively tanking. They would sit in front of Congress and say, I don't recall, but they are.
Yeah.
And in the second half of the season, there has been no more aggressive tanker than the Portland Trailblazers. And over the last 36, 37 games, depending on where you want to draw the line, the Trailblazers actually have a slightly better record than the Lakers.
Oh,
that statement and that reality is extraordinarily sobering for the situation the Lakers find themselves in.
They lost to the Denver Nuggets on Sunday. The Nuggets are a good team. I get that. LeBron James has an ankle injury, didn't play in that game. I get that. They get the Phoenix Suns tonight. The forecast for whether making the 10th seed is even feasible at this point, before we get into the excuses, what does that look like to you as we stand now with, you know, a handful of games left?
They're not going to make it. You know, I guess they're not mathematically eliminated, so I'm leaving myself open there. But they're not going to make it. And even if they had made it, even if the last, you know, 10 days had gone differently, they would have been a very quick out because for several weeks now, they were headed for no better than the number 8 seed, which means they were going to play the Phoenix Suns, who want to cut out their throats on an average day, much less the postseason.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns, by the way, who are currently having a season that is tied for the greatest in franchise history, 62 wins.
Right, and I have no idea what will happen in Tuesday night's game. The Suns don't have much to play for at this point. Everything is clinched for them. But my expectation is that the Suns will want to inflict as much pain on the Lakers as they can.
And the messages that have been sent from the Lakers in the meantime, right? I mean, Anthony Davis, who has missed, as you alluded to, 2 months with his injured foot, and he has been trying to play through it. He said this after they lost to the Nuggets on Sunday.
I think the biggest thing that I think about personally is what we could have been, you know, if we stay healthy all year. What could have we have been if I was healthy all year, Bron was healthy, you know? K-Nunn is healthy. So the most frustrating part about, you know, this season, just not being sure what we could have been.
K. Nunn, of course, is Kendrick Nunn. If you have understandably forgotten who that is the Lakers guard. He's not played a single game this season because of a bone bruise in his knee. But Brian, the whole idea of that big three, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, only playing 21 games together this season, is that the biggest explanation here? Is that the main suspect in the murder mystery that is the Lakers season?
That is the reason that they are in 11th place, is those injuries. But even if they were together, this would be a very flawed team that would not be heading for the championship. When you look at the Lakers this year, Pablo, there's really three big things that have undercut them. Number one, Russell Westbrook is a poor fit.
Westbrook outside trying to counter with a three. That's a second air ball he has thrown tonight. Westbrook, one of seven from the field, one of three from three, and he's hearing about it from the crowd.
It was a questionable fit when they made the trade. They believed they could figure it out, but most basketball minds that were not focused on name recognition and statistics from 7 years ago or 6 years ago questioned whether that fit would happen.
He looks great on SportsCenter. He's top 10. He's you know, Mr. Triple-Double. But it doesn't equate to winning basketball. He can't shoot.
The second issue is that to get Russell Westbrook, they blew up the number one defense in the NBA. And that's what the Lakers were a year ago, Pablo. They were the number one defense for the entire course of the regular season. To get Russell Westbrook, they traded away a couple of valuable defenders, and they elected to let another one, Alex Caruso, leave in free agency. Westbrook coming in is a bad fit, and the evisceration of their defense.
Suckers for Miami, look at that. Oh, my. The Lakers' defense in shambles.
They're 23rd in defense. That is a catastrophic collapse. To go from number one in the league to 23rd is stunning. And then the third issue is that Anthony Davis has missed about as many games as he's played with injury.
Yes. Oh, boy, that did not look good. Anthony Davis is writhing in pain and grabbing his lower right leg.
If Anthony Davis had been mostly healthy this season, Pablo, the Lakers would not be 11th. And they would not be 23rd in defense. But they would not be first, because they have been a flawed team even when they've been healthy.
And speaking of these flaws, Brian, we had Magic Johnson himself back on television on Get Up yesterday, talking very openly about how DeMar DeRozan, who is now the star guard for the Chicago Bulls and very notably an LA native, how DeMar was incredibly close, apparently, to signing with the Lakers until LeBron stepped in.
DeRozan could have been a Laker instead of a Bull. We could have made that deal. But when Russell and LeBron and them start talking, that's when they nixed that deal and went with Westbrook, and he became a Laker instead of DeRozan. But if you sign DeRozan, you only trade Kuzma for Buddy Hield, we would be playing in the Western Conference Championship this year.
And look, I get that Magic has a very personal angle on all of this, right? He was the guy who used to run the team. But I also think it's fair to point out that no one has the power over their front office as a player that LeBron James does. And so I'm curious, Brian, how much do you think LeBron is uniquely to blame for the way this team was constructed and the way it's failed?
When you go back and look at some of the things that the Lakers were saying and believing about their roster at the beginning of the season, it just illustrates how terrible their misjudgment was. I think there's been an attempt to pin all of this on LeBron. But if you go back and look at what was being said, everybody was claiming this. It was Westbrook who believed it.
When AD and Bron are friends of mine first, and me being their teammate, my job is to come in and uplift them. And they'll do the same with me, vice versa. And as the season prolongs, we will figure out how to play the best way that we want to play to be able to win a championship.
Anthony Davis believed it.
Myself, Russ, Bron, we got some defensive minded guys and guys who want to play defense. You know, especially to our scheme that we've been doing, you know, the past couple of years, just being the number one defense in the league. And, you know, even though we lost those guys, we can get back to our ways.
Rob Pelinka believed it. I think one of the most remarkable things that happened in this whole season, at least from what I saw, was the first day of training camp. Pelinka came to speak to the team, and this was captured on this great show that is done on Spectrum Sports in Los Angeles called Backstage Lakers. The team is sitting in their film room prior to their first practice of the season, and Rob Pelinka is going to make a traditional opening speech as the team general manager. And he looks at everybody and he says, "You could say this room has the greatest basketball talent assembled on a team in recent history." That's not revisionist thinking. That's what he actually said and thought, Pablo.
And so we talked earlier about all of the injuries that have besieged the Lakers and the excuses that are built in that may make LeBron James feel better when he puts his head on his pillow late at night. But it's pretty telling, Brian, that in this same building, there is a success story that kind of disproves the entire notion of injury luck. Because the Los Angeles Clippers are currently the 8th seed. They are 39-40. The Lakers are 31-47. And the Clippers just went through a massive stretch where they did not have either Paul George, their number two superstar, or Kawhi Leonard, their number one. And now we're hearing rumors about, could Kawhi Leonard actually be back for the postseason, recovering from that ACL injury? What are you hearing about his return as this figure who may just suddenly emerge from stage left and reshape the entire postseason?
Well, the Clippers have been very deliberate and cautious not to make any promises. Kawhi himself hasn't given any interviews for basically a year. But nobody on the Clippers will rule it out. That's what's been remarkable to me, because obviously in our job, we go check every month or every couple of weeks, and they're like, he's out there working. We're not ruling it out. And Tyronn Lue, their head coach, is a guy who doesn't typically comment on injuries. In fact, he literally plays dumb. You know, hey, do you know when so-and-so is going to come back? I don't know. One of Ty Lue's favorite things to say in media interviews is, I don't know. It's a really good technique, frankly, because it sort of ends the conversation, even though we know
that he knows.
He knows. That's not what he says about Kawhi necessarily.
Mm.
What he says about Kawhi is, I'm not ruling it out. So that does make you scratch your chin. Now, I will say this, Pablo. The Clippers very well could end up with the 8th seed and be facing the Phoenix Suns.
Mm.
The Suns are one of the most impressive regular season teams I've seen in the last decade.
Yes, yeah, same.
It may not be ideal for Kawhi to risk coming back from injury against Phoenix. But if the Clippers are able to get the 7th seed, and they're playing an inexperienced Grizzlies team, a Grizzlies team that may not have Ja Morant at 100%. They say he will be, but he's not out there. That makes you just pause for just a second.
Yeah, well, Brian, I do want to pause for just a second here and just remark upon the fact that it does feel like the Suns deserve our applause right now. I mean, they have 62 wins. The season isn't even over yet. Does that feel like the de facto NBA Finals contender out of the West to you? Because I look up and down the standings, and yes, Suns, Grizzlies, Warriors, the Mavericks are streaking right now. Luka Doncic has suddenly become an MVP candidate. But it sounds like the Suns, you're sort of penciling in at the end of the road here.
I do think the Mavericks are a fascinating team, and they've been terrific in the second half, particularly defensively, and they have Luka, who has gotten into really, really good shape. And if he was playing in November and December the way he is now, I think he would be an excellent candidate to actually win the MVP. He's going to finish in the top five, but he's playing as good as anybody in the league right now. So I think when you look at Dallas, they are a real threat. But when you take a step back and look at Phoenix's body of work, Pablo, specifically when you look into the results and then the numbers of what happens in clutch moments, and I mean when games are within 5 points within inside 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They are as devastating of a team as we've ever seen. Chris Paul, Devin Booker go to work. They have Mikal Bridges, who's tremendous defensively. Jay Crowder, tremendous defensively. DeAndre Ayton, who is very versatile as a big man. Monty Williams has done a terrific job preparing them. They're always ready to go. They're always focused. They have extreme confidence. They have the absolute look of an NBA champion. To me, they are an extremely impressive team. We have seen teams like this get upset, though. I mean, there's no guarantee.
Of course.
But they are an extremely impressive team.
And it sounds, Brian, like the Phoenix Suns, as constituted, are kind of bummed that the Lakers aren't going to be in that opening round, real playoff, 1-8 matchup themselves.
Here's the thing, Pablo. I don't think the Suns even regard the Lakers.
Oh.
Which is almost the biggest insult you can have.
It's the Don Draper line. I don't think about you at all.
I believe that's true. I think that if they play them, they'll dispose of them. And if they don't play them, they'll see them later in the offseason. I'll see you in Acapulco.
Well, admittedly, Brian, I think I have asked you to think about LeBron more than is justified at this point. So after the break, we're going to get to the, Eastern Conference, where a lot of soap opera is also happening.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Ryan, in the Eastern Conference, and this is in many ways, like, this is where the real story is happening, I have to admit. Like, we have the Brooklyn Nets having clinched a spot in the play-in tournament, which is great, but they are 10th. They are jostling still with the 9th-seeded Hornets and the 8th-seeded Hawks and the 7th-seeded Cavs and all of those nouns I just threw at you. Like, that's not how the story was supposed to go. Even when you account for the fact that Kyrie Irving missed so much of the season before New York City and Mayor Eric Adams changed the vaccine mandate, allowing him recently to finally play home games at Barclays Center. So what do you make of who the Nets are right now as presumably a play-in team that we have never seen anything like before?
The Nets are an incredibly upwardly mobile team, which means they have the ability to sort of put everything together and elevate to something that is way higher than their seed. But I am not seeing a lot of indications that that's going to happen. For all of the discussion about the value of having Kyrie Irving, for all of the belief that he and Durant are this wrecking ball, they haven't been. So when Kyrie and Durant have both played this year, at least at the start of this week, they're 8-6. When Kyrie plays at all, the Nets are 10-15. A lot of that record is influenced by the fact that Durant missed a bunch of time.
Yeah.
But if Kyrie is supposedly this otherworldly uplifting force, then how come they're so far below 500? And the reason is they're just a wreck defensively. They're ranked 20th in the league in defense. And generally when they play their best is when Kyrie and Durant just are on fire offensively. And sometimes they're on fire offensively and they still lose. You know, Durant had a 55-point game over the weekend and they lost.
Yes.
And so as you sit here, Pablo, and look at the Eastern Conference, this is the hardest the East has been in a generation. And by the way, like, they're in real jeopardy of having to be in the 9-10.
Yes.
And that means they got to win two games to get in, which means to reach the finals, they would have to win 14 playoff games in the Eastern Conference. And when you're looking at a gauntlet of potentially two play-in games on the road, which is a real chance, then not having home court advantage in the next three rounds and seeing a combination of Boston, Philly, Milwaukee, Miami, like, it's not so much a commentary on the Nets, who frankly have been average or slightly above average, but a team that is that poor defensively, expecting them to run that gauntlet, I just don't see it.
Yeah, a team that is struggling to defend, Brian, could really use the services of a certain two-time all-defensive player that they traded for less than 2 months ago. And unfortunately, Ben Simmons has yet to play for the Nets because of this herniated disc that he has in his back. And on Monday, we just heard Steve Nash, the head coach of the Nets, announce that Ben Simmons will not be playing until the first round of the playoffs at the earliest. So if the Nets happen to make it that far, even, like, how realistic is it that Ben Simmons is going to be able to help shore up what ails this team?
Right. And that was one of the reasons why they ultimately made the trade. They felt his jack of all trades ability defensively would be a huge weapon in winning the Eastern Conference this year. And frankly, Pablo, I agree. But, you know, he has not been able to get on the court and he's not even close to a contact practice, much less playing. He has not had any contact whatsoever. As far as I understand, he's only doing shooting drills. He's not even playing one-on-one yet. Now, maybe that'll happen this week, but the concept that Ben Simmons is going to, after not playing any contact at all for coming up on 365 days, the idea that he is going to be able to overcome this and come in and make a contribution is just very hard for me to believe. I can't rule it out. But again, as I'm looking at the lay of the land here, I just don't see it. I think next year, if he gets back healthy and this team comes back together, then we might have something. But we're talking about now.
And so where we stand right now, we have the Heat as the 1 seed, 51 wins. The Celtics as the 2 seed, 49 wins. The Bucks as the 3 seed, 48. The Sixers as the 4 seed with 48 wins as well. And the top of this conference, as you alluded to, is this meat grinder that is in defiance of all of the caricatures we have made about the Eastern Conference over the years. What do you make of what's going on in terms of the jostling right now for the 1 and 2 seed?
Yeah, so Milwaukee's, the reason that they're where they're at, they're not in the number 1 seed, is because they didn't have Brooke Lopez for 5+ months. And I know you would say, well, wait a minute, they have Giannis and Middleton and Drew Holiday. But the Bucks have spent most of this year in the middle of the pack defensively. And part of it is motivation as a champs. They haven't always had the gas down. It's as it has for decades for coaches dealing with defending champions. It's been a struggle to motivate them for Mike Budenholzer at times this year. But part of it is they didn't have the centerpiece of their defense. Brooke Lopez was a really vital part of how they protected the middle.
Yes.
And even though at the end of games, Giannis was out there playing center, especially last year in the finals, Lopez really helped them establish a tone for games and get control of games. So Lopez is back. He had back surgery early in the season, was able to work his way back, and he is playing. And when he is out there, the Bucks' defense shoots way up in the stats. The belief is that if they're whole, they still think they can win the whole thing again, and I believe them. I think you also look at Boston. Boston has had far and away, and I want to underline this, far and away the number 1 defense in the NBA since the first of the year. It actually goes back to their last couple of games of 2021. But they have been the number one defense that whole stretch. And so Robert Williams has been the centerpiece of it, literally, their back line defense. He's so good at protecting the rim.
Time Lord. He's been unbelievable, Brian, switching everything, defending everybody, making everything work defensively.
And so he is now out having had meniscus surgery. They are hoping that he is back by the second round of the playoffs. I am skeptical of that because I have learned in the NBA that there's no such thing as minor knee surgery. However, it is not my knee. It's just another thing that I've learned is to never make an assumption. But the Celtics have the profile of a team that can win three playoff series in this particular East. And in my view, the Celtics and the Bucks are the two teams I have the most belief in that can win three series this particular year. I think Miami can make a case. I don't feel as good about Philadelphia, and I don't feel that at all about Brooklyn.
Yeah, and so the Philly thing, let's just hit that quickly, Brian, because I imagine your worries are not dissimilar from my worries, but what are your worries?
Well, they have frankly been very poor in fourth quarters since James Harden arrived.
Yeah, I know that, and they, by the way, is almost a euphemism for James Harden specifically.
Yes, yes. He still is able to get to the foul line at a very high rate. In fact, he's getting to the line more this year, even when the officials are calling it a little differently than he was last year when he was terrific after the trade to the Nets. But he has lost a bit of his first step. You know what? He has lost a step. And it is really not even debatable.
You're saying what I have been screaming at my TV.
And so as a result, what's happening at the end of these games, you know, it's happened in several games, but they played the Phoenix Suns maybe about a week and a half ago in Phoenix. In the fourth quarter of that game, they played right up on top of James Harden and sat on his left hand.
Harden doubled on the sideline.
Defenses are going to let him operate there. Paul and Biombo all over James and Danny.
They totally overplayed shading him to the left. They said, James, we don't think you can get past us. And so we're going to step right up on top of your toes so that you can't use your step back, and we don't think you can do anything about it. And sometimes he pulls a little sorcery and gets a foul. But for the most part, he ends up taking contested shots because they're on top of him, and it's not working. And so Joel Embiid has been terrific. He plays effective two-man games with Harden at times. But they have been a poor fourth-quarter team. And Pablo, considering that there's going to be so much intensity in these Eastern Conference playoffs, and I feel like so many of these games are going to come down to fourth quarter games.
Yeah.
It doesn't inspire confidence.
And so you mentioned Embiid having a season worthy of serious MVP consideration. He has been a favorite for the award, or a co-favorite with Nikola Jokic, for so much of the season. But where are we now, Brian? Because we stand here with a handful of games left in the NBA season. We're somehow very close to the end here. And it feels like the horse race has gotten a little bit more dramatic than I had anticipated. What's it looking like to you?
So I believe that Nikola Jokic is the front runner now for the award. I have been and I still remain in the Joel Embiid camp. And in the most recent straw poll that Tim Bontemps did at ESPN amongst MVP voters, I did vote for Embiid. But Jokic came out of that poll, which was released last week, as the leader. He didn't have an overwhelming lead. He didn't have a lead that would be insurmountable. But he was in the lead, and he has had nothing but spectacular games since then. He's having one of the most efficient seasons in NBA history, if not the most efficient season in NBA history. When you also look at his team, is regarded as a team that has overachieved. Because the second and third best players arguably on that roster, Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., have essentially missed the entire season. And so even though I think the bar to win your back-to-back MVP is higher than winning your first one, his case is looking like it's pretty compelling. I think Embiid has been absolutely spectacular all season long. And even though he doesn't get the assist totals that Jokic does, his role in the Sixers offense is much higher than just standing down at the block waiting for the ball. He really is a leveraging point in their offense. He often plays on the high post and they, people move stuff around him. And he's obviously a superior defender to Jokic.
Yeah, defense, which happens to be half of the game.
Right.
That is where Embiid has the strongest case. And the way that Embiid has also been talking about this himself on Sunday night, I mean, that suggests that he is personally feeling a bit slighted by the voters in this whole thing.
If it happens, great. If it doesn't, I don't know what I had to do at this point. At this point, I feel like, you know, they hate me. So, and it's cool. I feel like in Philly, he always felt like, you know, you always have to do more.
And so to return to all the political language we've been using around straw polling for the MVP, I do wonder about the impact of a third-party candidate here, Brian, because we're seeing this late push by Giannis, we're seeing this late push by Luka Doncic, as we mentioned before, and I just wonder if those guys are going to fragment this race and spoil it in a way that changes the outcome, like, say, I don't know, Ross Perot in 92.
Well, I think Ross Perot got about 20% of the vote, and in this last poll, Giannis was getting about 10%. So if Giannis even were to double his base, he would be in the pro level. I think Giannis has been terrific. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Giannis is very deserving. I think one of the things that has been favorable for him is that he's had some terrific performances in some high-profile games in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
but as I mentioned,
the recency
before,
bias around national TV is pretty strong, I suppose.
The thing about it is this Bontemps straw poll, he's been doing it for 5 or 6 years now, and it has really been effectively predictive.
Mm.
And, you know, that poll had Giannis a pretty significantly distant third. He polls people in all 28 NBA markets and overseas, which is where the vote comes from. And, you know, a lot of this season, the Bucks were kind of underwhelming. That's the same thing with Luka. I mean, November and December, they do count in this situation. And a lot of people sort of demoted Luka at that time. And one of them was Luka. Luka agreed. So since the All-Star break, you can make the argument that Luka has been the best player or the second best player, but he hasn't been for the full season. And this, I believe in this polling. You know, I had Luka on my ballot. I did not have him first. I had Giannis third, Jokic second, and Embiid first. And I'm still considering. I have the rest of this week, Pablo, to decide. But
yeah, Brian, I imagine the lobbyists are just after you right now. I imagine that that's how this works at this point. People are trying to curry favor in ways that your journalism refuses.
You know what, Pablo? People don't lobby for the MVP. People lobby for Coach of the Year. They lobby for Sixth Man of the Year. I received a call from a general manager pitching me on a Most Improved candidate probably a month ago. The emails are rolling in, and you know, soon you'll be getting, you know, trinkets in the mail. And typically that's about like Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year. I can't remember ever getting anything more than a fact sheet about an MVP candidate. Obviously, coaches lobby by saying things in the media, and players can lobby by saying things in the media, but there isn't typically organized campaigns.
Little disappointing, gotta say. Little disappointed by that.
And the other thing is, there's only 100 voters, so this swings
right,
both ways.
Brian, it is actually a Senate's worth of voters.
That's right, and it's over the entire league, and it's over television people, newspaper people, and radio people. 17 people switched their vote from Embiid to Jokic between the second straw poll and the third straw poll. And that was enough to make a very close race that Embiid was slightly leading to Jokic by a significant amount. Just 17 people. That's a big percentage of the vote, but it's not that many people. This is a long-winded way of saying that, is Giannis out? No, he's not out, because he only has to sway 30 or 40 people. But those people are not, they do not go with the wind. It is not something that is easy to do, especially with just a case right at the end of the season.
Brian Windhorst, I truly want to thank you for showing us how basketball democracy really works.
We strive for a more perfect union, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.